Tom, what's that in your hair?
Looks like a fly, but at least I have dark hair.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on digital stream radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. My name is Tom, and as always, I'm here in the studio with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
All right. And Chris is in the studio as
we... He is here.
As we predicted,
I can vouch for that.
It's like host roulette. We never know what's going to happen.
Gee, who's coming on today? No, it's cool. It's cool. Now, we have an awesome show today. It's been quite the interesting week, to say the least.
There's actually a really funny video I have to send you guys, a TikTok that Bobby's cousin made.
Oh, God.
About the fly.
About the fly?
It's hilarious. It's actually really hilarious.
So, speaking of that fly, so the fly that caused a internet sensation after the last vice presidential debate, which was the only vice presidential debate.
Well, hold on, time out, because I was texting you, and at first, I thought it was on my TV.
I got up from my chair and tried to swap that thing away. I was like, let me just do
this. And then I was like, is this real? And you were like, you took a photo of it, and I was like, oh my God, holy crap.
I have finger marks where I swiped his head to try to get that fly off the TV.
Well, he fucking stinks. So, yeah, well, flies, you know, they tracks flies.
But remember when Trump had one in his hair?
I don't remember that.
There was some...
Trump probably has multiple different insects inside that.
Yeah, you're right. That's like a bee's nest.
Plop.
Uh-huh.
That thing. Yeah, that thing probably needs to pay rent.
It's alive. I mean, yeah. It must be alive.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's...
He probably has another kid under there.
Right, exactly.
It could probably be another employee in the White House. You know, like, it should be paying federal income, social...
Well,
we should start charging his hair.
It's in his defense, it's here illegally. So...
And, you know, not to mention that he dropped like $75,000 for that hairstyle.
Yeah, right.
I can't.
Like, write it off.
That's what he wrote off on his taxes. $75,000 for hair care.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, for what?
In 1 year.
I was like, what the hell are you using? It's not working. Whatever it is, but yeah, that was just horrible. And but the debate was very interesting, to say the least.
Well, it was better than the presidential debate,
right? You know, and it's Kamala, I think, did well. Mike Pence was just like blah blah blah.
I actually think they both did well.
They both did. I mean, Pence is a career politician. He can debate. He was very good. I don't agree with pretty much anything he stands for, but he is a very cleaned up debater.
The only thing I didn't like about Pence was I thought Pence could be an actual like politician who stood up for whatever he believed in, even though we don't believe in it, right? But you can see in the conversation they were having and in the questions that were asked that he has become this like mini Trumper.
Well, obviously.
Well, he
of
has
course.
To.
Well, of course. And his whole debate like planning thing was to remain calm. That's how he was, you know, prepped for that debate, to just be calm, be level-headed, and have a conversation, because the first thing was a fucking shit show.
Meanwhile, Kamala was just like...
Yeah, but it was better than Tim Kaine. That debate was a disgusting... Like, I was thinking about that the whole time. Like, remember when Tim Kaine was debating Pence back in 2016, and that was horrific. Tim Kaine was terrible. Mm-hmm. So Kamala was way more composed, and it was a good debate. It was an actual debate.
You know what is interesting is everybody always says that the VP debate doesn't matter, but I actually think in this case it really does.
Yeah.
Mainly because we have such old presidential candidates. One, because you never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you have two politicians that actually can speak and actually like give voice to what's going on in the world.
You know, except when he's like talking over her and she's like, I'm speaking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm speaking.
Yeah, no, you're right. But that, but he was but that able... didn't happen as much as I expected
and
it to.
When she said that, he pulled back because he was respectful of the rules of the debate, where Donnie was not.
Oh, that was a shit show. All of, that wasn't that I wouldn't even be able to consider.
It wasn't a debate.
A debate.
It was not a debate.
Like,
it was a disgrace for the American people.
It was horrendous.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry, gotta change the lights. I couldn't see anything here. But anyway, so debate is gone. I think that each candidate drove their message home. The only thing I didn't like, and I'm not liking that I'm seeing, is the campaigns, and I'm talking about Biden's campaign, unwillingness to address or just come clean about whether or not they plan to stack the court.
That's a very important decision and something that does need to be discussed, because the last time we really had big court packing discussion was back with FDR, and he was, you know, he was there to pack the court, and it's a maneuver that the Democrats can use to protect the country.
As long as they have control of the House and the Senate, and they have a...
Well, the Republicans are definitely on the defensive now, because they are not only poised to lose the White House,
right,
but they're poised to lose the Senate.
Right. The only thing I would say about that is I think that what Kamala did in talking about it was that she didn't talk about the fact that, yeah, they're probably going to pack the court, but what she did talk about was the fact that there should not be an appointment right now.
Well, there obviously shouldn't
be. She made really good points, and she was really clear about the whole thing. And that's what I loved about what she said, but she should have been more clear about the actual question.
Because they're not going to... The reason that she wasn't clear is because they haven't had a stance on if they're unwilling to pack or willing to pack the court.
So here's
I think they're going to if somebody gets appointed, though.
Here's my thing. In all of U.S. history, any president for their entire term in office should be able to appoint a Supreme Court justice.
Well, right? it's their constitutional job.
That is their duty. Right? But what's different in this case, and we're not saying that it because it's Donald Trump that he shouldn't get to appoint this this justice that's going through confirmation.
Third
person going through confirmation right now. What I'm
third
saying...
Third person just for the Supreme Court. We're not even talking about every other court that's been
of
appointed.
Of course, yeah.
Right. So what I'm saying, the point I'm trying to make is that every president has a right to appoint throughout their entire
not
full
even
term.
Right, duty.
Their duty. Through that, throughout their entire, all the way up until January 21st.
Yes.
He had, if another justice went, he has a right to appoint one, and the Senate has a right to offer...
A duty to...
To offer
a hearing.
A hearing and possible confirmation. What changed the game, though...
Yes.
What changed the game was that in 2016 going into 2017, when Merrick Garland was nominated by then-President Barack Obama in his last term, Mitch McConnell said, no, we're not doing this. This should be left to the American people, and it should be left to the next president to do so.
Right.
And they didn't give him a hearing.
No,
exactly.
They didn't even give him a hearing. And so they move forward with that, and they sideline him, and then we ended up with Gorsuch, right? And then jumpstart now 2020 going into 2021, and the same scenario presents itself. We have potentially a new president.
It's not the same scenario.
Well, yeah, it is. We potentially have
a
new...
Obama was out.
Right.
We knew Obama was
out. At that point, Obama was a lame duck. At that point, he had fulfilled his presidential terms.
Lame duck or not. Obama was still president until January 21st of 2017.
Absolutely. He should have been given... I'm not saying he shouldn't have been
He should
given
have.
A, yeah.
But he wasn't.
Correct.
Right? And so now that the tables are flipped, and here we are with a nominee right in the middle of an election, right before this president could potentially be ousted, comes available, and they're quickly changing their tune to the fact that they no longer believe that it is right for the next president... who comes in to potentially appoint someone to the Supreme Court when it's that close to an election. And we're talking about weeks. We have people that have already voted.
23 days, I believe.
Yeah.
23 days.
Over 5 million people have already cast a vote in this election.
So I have a question for both of you.
Yes.
I want to roll it back a little bit. I want to roll back to the fact that we have had two debates, and we have yet to hear any issue regarding the LGBTQ people. And I want to know how you two feel about that. Because right now, I feel like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, opening statements are coming on an LGBT issue to the Supreme Court starting, I believe, the week following the election.
Right. But we're still in the middle of the election. We should hear something from our candidates about their support of our community.
I was a little bit disheartened that wasn't... Well, obviously... Biden wouldn't even been able to get such messaging in because the asshole on the other side wouldn't have shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Right. So it is understandable as to why that shit show really didn't show us or give us enough. Mm-hmm. Kamala mentioned the LGBT community while working as DA in San Francisco and also being the attorney general for the state of California. And so she mentioned her work in her debate, but it wasn't as substantial as I would have liked it to be.
Knowing there is a lot going on in 2020, I still think, especially given everything we've gone through as a community with this administration, mm-hmm. that the Democrats really should be at least taking a minute or so to focus and say, we're here, we're still here for you.
Right.
And I mean, we see ads where they're saying that, but right. I want to hear it. Well, on a debate
go
stage.
It would be amazing if they did, but I want you to take a moment, if you can, as listeners or even as my co-panelists here, go take a moment when we're done recording and look at each candidate's page and see what they're posting. And so when you take, for example, Joe Biden's campaign. Yesterday was National Coming Out Day, right? And it is a day that for us, we celebrate the courageous act of coming out. And the Biden campaign, or the Biden himself, tweeted or put out a message on social media acknowledging the fact that it's National Coming Out Day and how important it is to support LGBTQ people mm-hmm. all over the U.S. And so the contrast is very clear when it comes to both campaigns and who's standing with us. But you're right. I wanted to see a little bit more on that in the limelight, in the spotlight, in debates, and we didn't get that.
Yeah. And I know the hot issue right now is BLM, and I think that it's been addressed, not well, but at least brought up for conversation. But I also think that it's important to not only talk about one marginalized group of people. I think we need to talk about all of the marginalized groups of people,
right?
In order to correctly just feel comfortable in saying, okay, I'm casting my vote for this person.
Realistically, right. though, the hot issue right now is COVID. That's everything right. is going to be
COVID and BLM.
And there's only
BLM is there, but it's going to be overshadowed by COVID right now. That is exactly what both parties are going to be discussing right. who can handle it better.
COVID.
Trump's
healthcare.
Side is way behind, and healthcare, exactly. Right. That's it. So BLM, of course, incredibly important, but it's going to be overshadowed by healthcare with the possibility of Amy Cohen Barrett.
Barrett, excuse me.
With her appointment. And I lost my train.
And what could subsequently happen if she gets appointed to
right? Because the ACA is
is being challenged right now. There is an active challenge to the ACA now in the Supreme Court.
It's one of the first hearings, as well as an LGBTQ+ issue that is going to be opening statements starting following the election. Mm-hmm.
So that being said, one of the other things that I also I was reflecting on also is the unpredictability of how people are going to vote. Right. So we're saying that this woman is obviously going to go and gut Roe v. Wade, and she's going to gut and go in and
she
vote
can't
to
do it by herself.
To get rid of the Affordable Health Care Act. Right. But there are times in where people who we thought lean a certain way surprise us.
100%.
So look at the decision for granting LGBTQ people protections in the workplace for not being able to be fired for being gay. The person who actually wrote the opinion on that was Neil Gorsuch, mm-hmm. right? And so I would have never thought in my wildest dreams that Neil Gorsuch would have been the opinion writer on a case that granted LGBTQ people protection from being fired just for being mm-hmm. gay at work.
No, you're right. I think it's important to appoint people that will level-headedly acknowledge and determine what the Constitution means when something comes up against right. it.
And some of my law friends might disagree with me, but Gorsuch wasn't the one that really worried me. It was more Kavanaugh. It was more Kavanaugh because he believed too much in a strong presidential power. He really backed the central government part of the three-tier system. That's
not to mention the one that worried me the most. Not to mention the fact that he had been accused of sexual misconduct on several women.
As was Clarence Thomas, of course.
That should have been the end of his nomination right there. That in itself. How he made it to the Supreme Court, you know, it's, again, white people in power that, you know, have the authority and the power to prove, put people in positions like that.
It is also to point out that, like you said, Nick, it's not one person who's going to overturn it. Roe v. Wade was a 7-2 decision.
Right.
So, yes, it is going to be a very right-leaning court, but it was a 7-2. So that is some sense of hope when it comes to actual justice for women's rights.
At the time, and it wasn't a very liberal court.
Exactly. Right? So and Roe v. Wade is still very much at stake, as is the ACA. But a 7-2, that's a big unbalance.
Well, and I also want to give props to some of the states who are now actively seeking to codify Roe v. Wade into their state legislation and laws. The state of New Jersey just did it or has something in the books right now going through the legislative process to codify it. So in case something like that does happen at the state level, it is law. And so that's basically what's going to happen. So Roe v. Wade will basically just make it not illegal at the federal level per se. It just basically says a state has a right to determine how they're going to manage abortion going forward, right? And that's what's going to need to happen.
It's more than that. A state does not have the power to deny the privacy of a woman. That's really what it is. It's not the power to abort. It's the power to privacy.
Right. Or to make choices for her own personal health.
Right.
And so if that landmark ruling is struck down, then it will be up to the states to codify it and make it legal.
I mean, and if you think back when we were doing the show at this point, when marriage equality hadn't been passed at the Supreme Court level and they were letting it percolate in the states and states were passing it, that means it's legal in those states, but then again, not recognized nationally. And that is the biggest issue, right? So we don't want these things overturned because as we've said, this presidency is like maybe 3, 4, 5 steps backwards, but like
I would say 10, but yeah.
But anyway, the point is there's a lot going on, especially with the Supreme Court and, you know, the election this year. But we have a guest coming on today.
That's right.
And I hate to take this over, but we didn't even touch on the fact that we have lives and Chris had a huge weekend.
Right.
And we should quickly do a round robin about what's going on in our lives.
Chris, 5 seconds. Go.
Yeah.
Nah, that was it. Now
you got your fucking degree in the mail. I did.
I did. I got a degree. I got my degree in the mail. Mm-hmm. I moved into my apartment. I got offered a full ride scholarship to Springfield College.
Nice.
That's awesome.
It was a big week.
Yeah.
It was a big week.
And meanwhile, you're like, man.
And he came in here all serious and shit, like, I'm super tired and exhausted.
Because I am tired. I had to move my motherfucking cello into my new place.
That's the only thing he's moved, though.
Yeah. And look at him. He's beaming and having and just extremely happy.
I'm excited. I was accepted to the history department for Springfield College with a full ride. So, yeah, I'll be able to earn my bachelor's degree with no debt.
That's
amazing.
That's
zero debt.
That's amazing.
Literally get a bachelor's degree and I can, you know, pursue my dream of being an educator. And I'm really looking forward to it. Like, I'm very, very, very much excited for January.
Well, I'm excited for you. And I hope that, you know, I wish you continued success in your education because I know it's never ending, lifelong learning.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you want to be a teacher.
Right, exactly. And so. I'm happy to say that I moved into my apartment with my boyfriend and things are going really well.
God save all those kids if he ever becomes a teacher.
History does repeat itself.
I will cut you.
It's like that bottle of shampoo, rinse and repeat.
I will cut you too.
Trish. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, honestly, not much happened in my life this week. I am starting real estate classes because I have no other option right now in my life, which is kind of sad. But you know what? Whatever. It is what it is. I'm happy.
When in doubt, sell houses?
Yeah. I guess. Like when it, no, literally. So obviously y'all know that I've been working at my friend's deli to like, you know, bring in a little, not even working.
No, you're not. Out. You're just helping him out.
Yeah. Like helping him out for like, whatever. It doesn't matter. But my sister had come in one day and she looked at me and we were chatting and her boyfriend was there. And I was like, oh, how the mighty have fallen. And they just both cracked up because I'm like changing out coffee. I'm like, what the fuck happened? I'm 30 fucking 3 years old. But
you're 33?
COVID, man. Yeah, I'm 33.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah.
Okay, like, hey, listen. There could be a lot of worse things in this world. All right, well, listen, I won't even go into going into all the stuff that I've done for this week, and I will just say this. Yesterday was, of course, October 11th, which, of course, is National Coming Out Day, or was, and is every year. It was first celebrated in the United States in 1988, and the initial idea was grounded in the feminist and gay liberation spirit of personal being, of the personal being political, and the emphasis on the most basic form of activism being coming out to family and friends and colleagues and living in life as an openly gay, or excuse me, as an openly LGBTQ person. The foundational belief is that homophobia thrives in an atmosphere of silence and ignorance, and that once people know that they have a loved one who is lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, that they are far less likely to maintain that homophobic or aggressive views. We know that that isn't always the case, but there is some truth to that. You know, once you start really seeing and being exposed to and having those conversations, people, for whatever reason, tend to sometimes come around. And so that's important. That being said, last week we had asked some of our listeners to submit stories. Tell us a little bit about their coming out, post a video on our Facebook page, and we got the responses, right? And so our guest after the break is one of our individuals who submitted his story. His name is Jared. He's amazing, amazingly interesting story, to say the least. I won't give any of it away, but what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. Leave you with some music, and when we come back, we have our guest, Jared, to talk about his coming out story. Stick around.
She was waiting by the back door, said, babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, cause we gotta go now, cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming just to say. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife, but they're coming. Well, they're coming down the road. Yes, they're coming, truth be told. They got a knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies, and they're talking so much hateful bullshit they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming. Well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming, no surprise. So much terror in our past. How are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey. And don't forget your history. It was never the land to sell or trade.
can get on that train. Head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming. Just the same.
All right, welcome back from the break, ladies and gents. That, of course, was Wastelands by Amanda Barrick. That is also the name of the album, which released on July 31st. It is available on all major music platforms. Make sure that you go check it out. She's awesome. So, we're back, and last week, in honor of National Coming Out Day, we had asked some of our listeners to share their coming out stories with us, and we got an email from one of our listeners, his name is Jared, who shared his incredible story with us. I reached out to him and asked if we could share his story, and he agreed, but instead of reading it to you, as we normally would, I reached out to him and asked him to come on the show and talk about his story, which I thought was very moving and incredible. And joining us now, of course, is our guest, Jared. Jared, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
So you sent us this email. You are openly gay, but you were in marriage, married to a woman. You have a beautiful daughter, and your path to coming out wasn't easy. And so, why don't?
P.S. You're in good company. We're all openly gay.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
So, if you could tell us a little bit about that path, what was it like?
It was, man. Like, I don't even know where to begin. It was a 2-decade journey for me to discover who I am. And accept who I am, not just discover, but accept, because I mean, it's feel like it's very easy to discover things, but when you have to actually accept what those mean,
right.
Completely different.
So roll it back a little bit. Like, let's go back to when you first started to think about it. What was that like for you? Cause I know for me, I remember when I was younger, I would lay in bed and be like, gay, me, I couldn't be gay of all the guys in the world. Me, why me?
Like, yeah. Well, okay, so rolling it back, way back. So when I was in high school, obviously I was super cool, homeschooled person. yeah, and so no, like I was, I don't like to use the word sheltered. I felt like I grew up very, very naive. And so I first noticed like some form of attraction, and I just, with my only outlets being like church and Boy Scouts and sports, it was never like a super healthy, like, I mean, at Boy Scouts, like everybody was just like, oh, well, you're gay. And I'm just like, okay, well, I don't know that really what that means. Like, because I wasn't really exposed to any other gay people. So yeah, when I first started like noticing things, I was a little bit younger. And then by the age of like 15, like I would, like, I don't know, I don't want to be overly explicit. I had like my first experience like with another guy, and I was just like, okay, so I know that this is probably not something that straight people do. And so, but I just didn't know what to do with that information.
So you had your experience, and then you went through life doing all of the heteronormative expected things of you. You know, obviously you have, you know, parents usually imprint certain things that they expect their children to be. Like, you have to grow up, you have to get married, you have to have children, you have to do all of these things. And for the most part, you suppressed some of those feelings that you had, and you did that. So talk to me about that process, like meeting, for example, your I'm not sure if she's your ex-wife now or your wife, and how that transpired and how you were feeling at the time, like meeting her and saying, were you going through that thought process of saying, oh my God, you know, I think I can love this woman, and maybe I can just push this aside, and how was that internal struggle for you meeting her and then deciding to go through with marrying her?
Well, I feel like I should have probably said something earlier, otherwise I'm going to drop a bomb right now. This is actually not my first marriage.
Oh.
And, oh.
Yeah. Okay. I was in the military, and so like as most people that were in the military, at some point you have your practice marriage. And that was my first one. But then like, so when I had met my current wife that were separated, I remember being told like growing up that love is a choice and like you choose to stay committed to a person. And I felt like I really developed like a good, strong emotional connection with her. I was overseas at the time. And so all we could do is Skype. And so like, we would just talk that way. And so we didn't really cross any physical boundaries or anything. And so I felt like I started to cultivate like this emotional bond with this person. And it just felt very natural. And so all the while I was thinking about like, okay, well, if I have these feelings and I have these desires to be with other guys, like maybe I just haven't found the right girl yet. Maybe if I find the right one, all of these urges and desires will go away. And I tried that. Like I tried like to, like when I came home, she was there for my homecoming and everything. And like, I just kept expecting like things would go away and nothing has. So
you chose to get a divorce from your first wife and then explored another marriage?
Yeah. Okay. So that, like my first marriage, like it was on my first deployment, it ended. And it had nothing to do with sexuality or anything like that. She made different decisions while I was deployed that I didn't agree with.
Okay.
And so I didn't get a chance to really unpack a lot of like, and do a lot of soul searching for myself because I was so bitter with her. And then to make matters worse, she told everybody that she was leaving me because I was gay. And so I was just like, and at the time, like, I didn't even know that I was gay. I was just like, no, I was just angry and hurt. And so I told myself that I wasn't going to date anybody. And I didn't really get a good chance to like really explore like and do some more like soul searching for myself before starting to talk to this other girl. So yeah, does that clarify that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. No,
it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. So then you jump forward to your second marriage. You ended up getting married again. Now you're having a relationship with this woman and you go through all of these emotions of trying to connect with someone again. And in the process of that, obviously there was some sort of physical connection because you ended up having a child.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you decide that you want to take that jump. You want to move forward and go a different direction, not necessarily for you, but also to just let people know that this is who you are. You come to the realization that you are now gay. And
yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about how that went on in your head.
Yeah, what was the catalyst for all of that?
Okay, so honestly, after having my daughter, I love her to death. I really started having like really bad like breakdowns, and like I was really starting to struggle with how can I look at my daughter in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and say, it's okay to be you. I love you no matter what, if I'm still afraid to be who I am. And so it was like looking at her, knowing that, you okay, Trish?
Cut my mic.
But yeah, I was just, I felt like I couldn't go on like lying to myself, lying to people around me. And it very much felt like I was, yeah, very conflicted.
So can I ask a really personal, and you don't have to answer this question, but what was there a moment or a person that made you realize, hey, this is what I want? Or was it just, I had my daughter and I have to be true to myself?
Yeah, that's a good question. There was a moment. It was actually, Tom, you had asked me earlier, like how long I had been listening. Now that I'm thinking about it, I started listening in November timeframe. So well beyond like 5 months, because we're in October now. So
COVID entertainment, basically.
Yeah, oh, pretty much. Absolutely.
I'll take it.
Gotta have something.
And so I was actually November 11th. I was listening to a podcast. It was, I believe it's called like The Coming Out Coach or something like that. And it was just, I just was scrolling through things to listen to. And the episode that I listened to, it was a guy who was talking about how he had random hookups. And it wasn't until like he actually like developed feelings for this one guy that he finally realized that he was gay. And I started thinking about the fact that I've had multiple different hookups and I'm always looking for something. I'm missing something in my life. And I was just like, this is it. It just, for whatever reason, really hit me that like, I'm gay and I'm not going to accept I'm gay until I find somebody that loves me. And I was just like, I need to accept the fact that I'm gay, because I would rather accept that I'm gay while I'm married and separate my wife than try to hide something and then develop feelings for somebody else and then get into this whole muddy, like being married, cheating and that stuff. So I was just like, I can't do that. And so it was a podcast that I heard that was one of the first times I heard something that was like LGBT that wasn't sexual in nature that I was able to relate to.
So to be clear to our listeners, your coming out had nothing to do with your engagement with another individual. It was more so soul searching, finding yourself, listening to podcasts and saying, hey, I need to do this because if not, I'm going to put my significant other through hell and back. And cheating for you or having multiple partners while being married wasn't an option.
Yeah, I just felt like it wasn't going to be respectful for my wife.
Right. And when you talk about your wife specifically, I think that that's a huge part of your coming out. And a lot of people that are in marriages right now that may or may not be gay probably have felt similar feelings to what you had felt. Like, I don't want to hurt this person. I don't want to tear their life apart. What was that process for you? What was that like for you? What was that like for her? How are you guys doing as a couple now?
That was hard. That was really hard. I could have done better. I wish I would have done better. I wish that I would have had the courage at first when I first started talking to be completely, in my story, I used the word transparent and I wasn't transparent at first. And so like that was hard looking at it, saying like, I love you, I care about you, but I also love me and know that this isn't right for me. Uh-huh. And so trying to walk that line of, I don't want to hurt somebody who has been so supportive and so loving and doesn't deserve this pain that I'm putting her through.
Right.
But ultimately, like I knew that I can either live for somebody else, live to make her happy and stay with her, all the while not feeling like I get to live my life. And I, at 32 years old, I'm tired of not living my life.
So, but the thing is, you know, and a lot of people need to understand this, that you didn't set out to hurt her feelings.
No,
you
didn't
set out to break her heart or to, it's just, you know, again, this is why it is very important to understand what heteronormative expectations and what society pushes on people is so, how would I say, toxic, right? Because what ends up happening is that you grew up your entire life expecting that what was expected of you was that you needed to get married, get a wife, have children, and that in itself would consider yourself a productive member of society. Right. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people don't realize is that when you are put in those situations, when you are expected to do things in a certain way, and that's not for you, it's very hard to get out of that. Right. Mm-hmm. To just say, fuck it, throw caution into the wind. And before even going through all of that, say, mom, dad, I'm gay. It's very hard. It's not an easy thing to do. And so what people need to realize that even though you went through all of this and now you're at a situation in where you're separated and she's probably heartbroken, you didn't do that intentionally. Right. And so.
And beyond that though, as well, it's like the reality is it is 2020, the worst year that we have all experienced.
I know. Like, how could I drop that honor?
That being said, the fact is it's 2020. And we did go through an Obama administration, and we don't know who you're voting for. But that's not the point of this. But yeah. The reality really? Is, when we came out of that,
only one option.
The Thank you. Thank you. Claps. But when we came out of that, we all felt so empowered as a community. And the fact that you are now 32 years old, you have a child, you had a wife, two wives, the fact that society has placed that on you, that is the biggest fucking problem, right? You grow up in a world where society is placing these social norms that then you follow through with because people are telling you one thing, but in the reality, you're feeling one way, you're feeling the exact opposite.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's something, like, I was talking to one of my friends, like, after I had posted my story, like, he had messaged me, and he had said, like, that, like, with his coming out, that it was easier for him because he just knew, and he was just like, I never once thought about, like, how other people, like, and obviously everybody has their own stories, and a lot of us have similar stories, but, like, he was looking at it from the other side of saying, like, oh, man, like, I never realized that other people had that much pressure to be, like, heterosexual and everything. He was like, for me, it was like, I had no choice. I was absolutely gay. And I was like, man, that would have been nice.
In a perfect world. Yes. So now you are separated. You're living your life openly as a gay man. I'm assuming, right? That's an assumption.
Yep.
And obviously, I mean, I see the shirt. It says, cheers, queers. Love it, by the way. But you have this amazing, beautiful daughter, which we got an opportunity to meet earlier while we were doing sound check. So how does it feel to be a father and be gay? And what do you think those conversations are going to be 20 years from now when you're sitting down with your daughter and having that conversation?
Oh, man. It feels weird. I feel like okay. So first off, I love my daughter. I try to take her out once a week. We do like daddy-daughter dates. Cause we've got a lot of really good restaurants around here and I just love to take her out. And so it's, sometimes it's a little awkward because I feel like people are looking at me like, well, where's the mom? Where's her mom? But like, honestly, like, I don't feel like we're missing out on, like, I know that she has good quality time with her mom and everything, but I feel like it's, yeah, man, I'm getting lost. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, it's really fun and it's really exciting. I think that there will be plenty of very awkward conversations as we get older, especially like coming from, like, I grew up in a religious household. And so I know that, like, and her mother is religious. And so I know that there will be like different conversations that, like, I'm going to have to kind of like challenge like her perspective a little bit. And so I'm terrified about that. And it just, but I don't know. It's amazing right now. I love it. I love taking her to the park.
Yeah, you have this weird, crazy opportunity to kind of help shape the next generation because you have a daughter as a gay man. I don't know if you're single or not, but you have this opportunity to really shape her view on whether it's religion and what homosexuality means with religion, but you have this opportunity and it's kind of a big deal not to put pressure on you.
Well, thank you.
A little pressure.
Just a little. Speaking of religion, tell us about how your parents reacted, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, I told my parents at different times. I went to call them, like, they weren't together, and so I had to tell my mom because I was like, F it, I'm angry right now because I thought you were going to be together, and so I'm not going to wait. I'm going to tell you. And so I told her everything. There's a lot more that I didn't include in, like, the message. And so I went into, like, mental health issues. I went into, like, like my life, like, how we're separated, and I went into, like, all different kinds of things. And then at the end of like a 45 minute like shit show conversation about how bad my life has been, I was like, oh, and I'm gay. And she was just like, she like paused for a second and she was like, okay, where are you at with Jesus? And so I was just like, okay, like that one kind of, that was like a punch to the gut. Cause I told her, I was just like, I just told you I've struggled with suicidal thoughts for
right.
15 years, like 20 years, and you're interested in knowing about where I'm at with religion. Like, I feel like to her defense, like, she was processing and that was the safest area that she was able to go to. Since then, we've been able to have more conversations, and been able to kind of like work through some different things. And we're currently kind of at the spot where, like, my dad used to be a pastor, and they are both at the point where they're like, we love you. They struggle with using the word accept, because I think that they think that that's like affirming, but I'm like, I'm just looking for you guys to say that, hey, we know you're gay. Like, yeah. That's the biggest thing. And so they're still struggling. But my mom did, one of the last phone calls, she did tell me that she wants to get to the point that I'm able to bring like a guy home, and she doesn't look at it any different than like my brother bringing a girl home.
Well,
which is really powerful.
Yeah, it is. I think that would be, that's a substantial constructive conversation to have with parents. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I had read something earlier. Which is the official definition of National Coming Out Day, as it is written in some of these online sources, where it says that, you know, the whole point of celebrating National Coming Out Day is to basically reaffirm the fact that you're doing it, but in doing so, that in coming out, people who know that you are either gay, bisexual, transgender, or lesbian would then be less likely to maintain homophobic or oppressive views, because they know they have someone that they've always loved all their life that now is, right? And so that's a perfect example of what that was describing, right? Your mother now knows, she's struggling with it, but she's working on it. And you guys are having constructive conversations about how do we move forward, right? And the most beautiful thing out of all of this is that you haven't lost her. Right. Mm. There's some people that come out and go through their life without their parents because they're shunned by the family because of them being who they are. And in your case, I'm seeing a very positive thing. You're constructively working towards that inevitable relationship that you're going to have with your mom, knowing that she's going to know that you're an openly gay man. You have your beautiful daughter who's her granddaughter, and you're going to be able to have that relationship.
Well, if you think a bush can talk, anything's possible.
Right. So
I have two more things I want to ask. I don't know if you guys have more, but my first one is, so you're fucking out now. You're sexy as hell. You have a beautiful daughter. How do you feel? I mean, you're talking about the fact that you were suicidal. You were talking about depression. You had two wives. Like, are you feeling better?
You know, I feel like it comes in waves. First off, let me just say, yes, I do feel better. I feel like a lot better knowing that I'm no longer hiding something. My relief kind of comes in waves still, though, because there's so much to be done, like, within my life. Like, my current living environment and everything, and then there's so much more work that I want to be a part of with the community. And so I feel like I can breathe, and I'm excited, and I'm also super excited about getting more involved now.
That's amazing.
Which is awesome. And so after coming out, what was the first thing? Have you been to a Pride yet?
No. Well, 2020.
Well,
yeah.
That's
right. No.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah. We'll take you to New York Pride next year.
Super salty. I was super salty. Yes, please. Yes.
Or if you guys
want to come out to like Chicago for it, like whatever.
Yeah. I've been out to Chicago Pride. It's actually pretty rad. You guys throw a serious.
I know.
I was
rad. He said rad.
I'm super excited.
Well, that because that's how my friend Jeff actually said it. Yo, let's go to Pride. It's
you
super
said rad.
Rad.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Brad. Literally going back.
Showing your age, Tom. You're
yeah, exactly. Thank you.
All right. So. You know, Jared, I was kind of liking you, but
so
you're getting these two like, to start attacking
slice,
me.
No, Brad you is said Brad. It. You said it. But so, do you guys have anything else?
Yeah, I just want to tell you something quickly. Yeah. When I arrived in Chicago for Pride, it was rad. I arrived with my suitcase. I got on the, I believe it was the Blue Line, going from the airport into downtown.
Wheelies.
Hopped on the Red Line, showed up at Trax. Is that still a thing in Boys Town somewhere?
Yeah, it was super rad there.
Trax.
What's the bar that was on, it, like the main bar that people go to?
The Rad Bar. That was really rad.
Huh?
The gnarly one?
Oh, gnarly.
Gnarly. No.
I don't know how to use that word.
A silent G.
I haven't gone to Boys Town in probably, I've only been there like a handful of times. And so, because I live about 2 hours from Chicago. Okay. So I've only been there like a couple times. So you tell me whatever bar you went to and I'll believe you.
Listen, I ended up arriving and I had just got off a plane. I have my luggage with me and my friend is like, dude, let's go grab a drink. I'm like, cool, but what am I going to do with this luggage? I walked up into the bar with my luggage and the bouncer's like, you can't walk in here with that. I'm like, oh, well, here, shove it in the closet. I'll be back in an hour. Had drinks, you know, partied on. And then here we go, walk of shame with luggage. Got on the red train, got all the way up to wherever it was that he lived at, and it was super, super amazing. Rad. Like, Chicago has a rad gay scene.
Oh, my God.
It really does. Did you hear that they're renaming Boys Town, though?
Yes, I did. How do you feel about it?
I hate it. I love Boys Town. I love the name. I love the environment. I know that it's not going to change anything, really, but I feel like it might change.
Well, officially, they're going to name it something else, but it'll always be called Boys Town, and I think they're just trying to, because Boys Town makes it sound just for boys, right? And in reality, when you visit Boys Town, it is the mecca for the LGBT community.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think it only makes sense that they do that, but it will always be.
Well, then they should name it like Queerville or something.
Yeah. No.
The name,
hell fucking yeah.
The name is kind of weird. I have, actually, we talked about that like 3 weeks ago.
Q-Square. Like, I don't know.
But
that could work. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, but what are you going to do? But all I can say is Chicago is fun, and if you're up in that area, then you're in a good place, unless it's winter, and then it's just not so nice.
No, and I want to get a picture by the bean, but anyway.
It's brick. So, Jared.
So, my last question.
Yes.
Is, there are a lot of people out there that are probably in situations like yours. Hopes and dreams for you, and also, what would you say to them?
Hopes and dreams for me. I'll tackle that one and then like go on to that. Hopes and dreams for me. I hope that I'm able to bring about some form of change within our community so other people don't have to go through the feelings that I felt. That I can bring about. I know that that a lot of people have talked about like doing away with coming out, and I would love it if we could get away from like the whole coming out, and it's just you are you and people don't need to ask. And people don't need to assume who you are.
Right.
And so my hopes and dreams is to become more involved inside the community and bettering it. So that way, yeah, people don't have to have these painful coming out stories.
Right.
For people who are in like situations, life is hell. It's going to be hard. And you need to do you at the end of the day. Like that was the hardest thing. You're not trying to hurt somebody. But you're hurting yourself by not living your truth. So.
That's amazing.
Do you not want to just hug him right now?
I do. Yeah. I do. And I want to say, you know, I'm very proud of you. And I'm very proud of how things turned out for you. It's I'm really super proud at the fact that you have a relationship with your daughter. And that you're able to cultivate that and still be proudly gay and out. Because sometimes when, you know, situations like this happen, you know, the other partner typically can get pretty bitter about the situation. Mm-hmm. They prevent people from seeing children, and it could be a lot. Like you really had a lot to lose, and you ended up in a situation in where you fell on your feet, but you've kept one of the most important pieces of your life prior to coming out. And I think that moving forward, that's going to make you a tremendous human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh, well, thank you guys for reaching out. Like, this is like kind of a dream come true. I'm so glad I got to like talk to you guys and meet you guys.
Well, you're stuck with us now.
Yeah, welcome to the Gay Talk family.
So listen, I want to thank you again for joining us. We do have to, of course, you know, the show must go on, but we're super appreciative that you are on here with us and that you told us your story, and feel free to reach out to us anytime you'd like, and visit us again. Come join us on the round table again anytime.
Oh, well, thank you. I definitely will. You guys have a good night, and thanks for talking.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for your service.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right. Bye.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, that, of course, was Jared, our guest. Wow. Wow. That's all I can say. It's not always...
Wow, because he was so hot, or wow, because it was an intense story?
It was an intense story, and also he's very handsome.
Yeah. Extremely handsome. I'm feeling both emotionally drained and physically drained right now.
She had to take it there. Normally, I'm the nasty one.
That was a great beard.
Oh, yeah, it was. Are you kidding me? It's like on point. No, but he's awesome. And, you know,
I'm not a beard guy, but I was into that.
Good for him. Yeah, I would totally be into that.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I can't honestly, like, to be real, though, like, I can't imagine. I've been out since I was, what, 15, almost 16? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine having to go through not only two marriages. Do I want kids? Maybe one day, yes. But having a child with somebody and then having to actually come out and say something to them about it. Like, I always talk about how I don't want coming out to be a concept anymore. And I mean, he does. He has a really intense and beautiful story. And I'm so proud of him for everything that he endured while trying to find himself.
It's pretty intense. So speaking of coming out, how many years has it been for you?
I'm 33.
Oh, so old.
So 18 years?
Wow. Chris?
6? 8? 8.
8 years? Wow. 8? 26 for me.
Wow. Aww. Again, so when, she's dating herself.
I'm carbon dating. There's a difference. No,
she's got a fucking yellow copy somewhere.
It's a fucking half-life.
You remember those printers that you had to sort of kind of like put the ink in and then put the paper and you rolled it and pages just popped out of the other end? That's how we did our copies.
Yeah, no, we don't know that.
You had to like take like a bottle of like ink and shove it into the machine and squeeze, and then you just keep rolling, rolling. Boy. No, but you know, it's so it just goes to show you, and you know, and
they're
just
coming out as rad.
Yeah, it is. It is. But believe it or not, that's how my friend Jeff, who I went to visit in Chicago, calls everything. I was like, this is so rad. Let's go to the bar.
Dude, I remember so many slang terms back in the day but no.
Yeah, I know. So, anyway.
But I mean, like, it fit. Don't get me wrong. It fit. It's it was rad. Just like a perfect way to like attack the intern.
He lives in the area, in that area, and he understood exactly where I was going. It's just you two bitches that always like every time I say something out of the ordinary, their heads fucking pop like they just got whiplash and look at me like I'm dying.
Jared also said you were dating yourself, so
that is a fact.
I cannot with
this
you.
This is not fake news.
No, it's not. It's not. So anyway,
no, but it was great. It was great. Thank you for
seriously. Thank
you for bringing him on, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome. I actually booked this guest.
She did.
I did. I did it all by my lonesome. What are you sending over here? Oh, What's you got on Stay in Gay History? You can get it eventually, right?
It's already in there.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. So anyway, so
read the notes.
Oh, I'm still like, you know, coming off of the high of having the conversation and talking about.
I want to point a Roman candle at you.
Oh no! Don't do that. That's not nice, Christopher. Be You're nice not to Italian. Me. Love me.
Yeah, no, God, no, I'm not Italian.
So, shall we talk about this nutcase, Tommy Lauren?
Yeah, I mean, I hate her, so we might as well, like, quickly run through this.
Why, fuck her. Don't give her any clout.
Okay.
I mean, go ahead now.
No, I mean, we're going to talk about her. I mean,
No, I mean, Tommy Lauren, who we fucking can't stand, went and questioned Joe Biden's masculinity because he was wearing a mask during the coronavirus pandemic and basically said,
I mean, we're all wearing a mask
on Twitter that Joe might as well carry a purse with the mask.
Oh, fuck her. Like, you know, I'm really tired of this Barbie wannabe crazy, disgusting.
No, fuck her.
Like far
Anyone
right.
Anyone who is against wearing a mask, they're just assholes. They don't care about other Americans.
100%.
If they think they're patriotic, they're unpatriotic. By wearing a mask, you greatly reduce the risk of spreading any kind of germs. So put a fucking mask on.
But they're so hypocritical because listen, if President Trump created a mask right now that says fuck Biden, every single Trump supporter would be wearing a mask right now.
Probably.
Like, it's just, they're hypocritical. And, you know, it's just like, all they want to do is just do the opposite of what should be done. Just so that they can say, you know, fuck it, nobody's going to control my life.
If you walk into my restaurant where I'm working and you don't have a mask on, I don't serve you.
And you know what? Bravo. And you shouldn't be
serving. And I say that. I say, put your mask on and I'll serve you.
But the thing is like, some of these people just need to get it through their head that this is not something personal. It's not a personal attack on their rights and freedoms. It is just you being a decent human being and protecting everybody else around you.
I just don't know why Tommy Lauren still has a platform to say anything. Like, stop
because
speaking.
Like Donald Trump, she has an audience.
She's really not even that hot.
There is a post though, like on the Twitter feed for whatever Tommy Lauren said that said maybe 210,000 Americans wouldn't be dead if we had a president who carried a purse. And there's Hillary Clinton with her purse waving her hand.
I bet her snatch stinks. Well, like, I bet it's like listen. Not like it's like beef stock that you may have left out of the fridge a couple days.
If it's not bad,
but it's not good.
Right. But if we're going to talk about the coronavirus, let's pause for a moment.
Are we talking about snatch or coronavirus?
Kind of the same thing. But not really. So you want to talk about coronavirus, and we hear all of these scientists talking about how the AIDS pandemic kind of set scientists up to help everybody and, like, figure this the fuck out. And everybody's fucking concerned about the coronavirus. But when AIDS came around, no one gave a fuck. It pisses me the fuck off.
Well, it took time to understand that. Also, the Barack...
But then don't use it as a case study. Like, don't use something that killed so many people in the LGBTQ plus community as a case study and then publicly announce that it's a case study about the fact that we are now trying to fix something that is going on nationally, internationally.
So you're saying that they're taking the lessons learned from the AIDS epidemic...
Which they could have invested in far earlier, which they didn't because it wasn't affecting heterosexuals as much as it was affecting homosexuals.
But what I'm trying to understand is why this came up. Are they trying to use the data that they gained from the HIV pandemic to model it and see if they can use it with COVID to circumvent what we're in the middle of?
What they learned during that pandemic and how they reacted during that pandemic, at least scientists reacting during that pandemic. That is the type of strategy a lot of scientists are using right now to react to the coronavirus. Well, they're reacting to a pandemic.
Right.
But it's on an international scale that it's affecting everybody, not just one marginalized community.
Right.
And so they continually bring up in news broadcasts AIDS and what, you know, the community went through and how the scientists react to it and learn from it and treated it. And now they're using that case study publicly, which is fine, I guess. But at the same time, it pisses me off because I'm like, oh, now it's okay to, you know, publicize something that for the longest time people weren't giving a fuck about.
Right. Well, I think that I understand what you're saying, right? It pisses us off that it took that pandemic and that many loss of people to get to a point
that many loss of marginalized people that weren't cared about.
Right. And but
let's talk about the fucking, what is it? The island.
Hart's Island.
Like, yeah. I mean, they literally, was fucking done for the longest time.
A whole bunch of unidentified bodies with numbers on them were buried on this island because parents did not want to recognize the fact that they had a gay child or go pick up the body, go verify that the person who was dead on that, you know.
Well, also, what do you call those flatbeds? People didn't have the information about how it was being spread.
What do you call those autopsy beds? In the morgue. They didn't want to go and identify their bodies because they were ashamed of the fact that their son, daughter, whoever it was gay. But I think, and I hear you.
I went left field a little bit.
I know, but I hear you. But I also think that, you know, good for them if they're using that as a means to determine how to move forward in such a pandemic. Because it means that what we learned from that, and hopefully they're acknowledging that, you know, they learned that because of what our LGBTQ brothers and people went through and those that lost their lives. What we learned from that is helping save lives today.
Yes.
Right? Like, I get your anger. I understand. Like,
my anger lies in the fact that the action, one, we have a president who lied.
Right.
And didn't tell us what was really going on.
Right.
Two, now that we know what's actually going on, they're using a case study in which they actually didn't do anything with until it started affecting people that weren't a part of the LGBTQ plus community.
Right.
Or may have been.
But we know that's the history, right? We know what happened. We know how they fucked up. We know how Reagan didn't even acknowledge it.
But now they're saying, oh, well, because this happened, we're making all of these like forward movements and all of these like, you know, positive things. Like, this is why we're moving so fast. I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, that's a good thing, though.
It's a good thing, but at the same time, like, don't just say because of. Acknowledge the fact that how many fucking people died because of that.
Right.
And, like, the reality is, it took how long for Bill Clinton to step out and walk along the fucking Washington fucking...
National Mall.
The National Mall, and acknowledge all of the deaths. I mean, like, acknowledge what we lost and say, because of all of these people we lost.
Right.
We were able to make these huge leaps to serve not only the American people, but the international community.
Right.
It's not just because of the AIDS epidemic. It's because of the lives lost.
Right.
And I think that's what pisses me off.
Right. So the community paid a heavy price for the lack of response from the government at that time.
100%. And there hasn't been a lack of response. There has and there hasn't. The scientific community has been responding.
Of course. Since day one, they already gave us our directive.
The government has been hiding shit and not telling us the truth.
Right.
But the reality is, there has been a response for the coronavirus since we knew about it.
Right.
Whether the American people were given the, you know, truth or not, when it came to the AIDS epidemic, that was not the case. Right. And instead of acknowledging the fact that we lost all of these people, and because of their sacrifice, we were able to make leaps and bounds to help people with the coronavirus, they're literally just saying, because of AIDS.
Right.
And that's what pisses me.
And I understand it. It is very upsetting to not acknowledge all of the sacrifice that occurred as a result of that. But I think that what the leaps and bounds that we've made is a good thing for
100%.
For humankind and mankind. Just know that that came at the price of the deaths of many, many, many LGBTQ brothers and sisters.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that. I mean, there were plenty of pandemics before that. I mean, you have the H1N1. There were plenty of other ones. But the point is, a lot of the way that they reacted to it is modeled off of how they needed to react to the AIDS epidemic.
Right. Funny that you mentioned H1N1 type A-1. That was the strain that the Spanish flu, which is typically called the Spanish flu, it was the H1N1, like influenza, during the 1912 pandemic. Mm-hmm. Or was it 1918?
That's not H1N1.
Yes, it is. I was reading the same strain. H1N1 was the same strain that we had in 2009, back when we had the Spanish flu. I was reading a documentation on it, and I was pretty struck. I was like, really? I was like, I thought H1N1 was something new that came out.
It was
like
1919.
But anyway, that's beside the point. Tommy Lauren sucks.
Totally
fuck her.
Went off on a tangent.
She just needs to. Somebody needs to stuff something up her throat and just, you know,
just fucking wear a mask.
Like, seriously,
and fucking vote.
Yes. So anyway, that's right. So voting is right around the corner. Christopher, why don't you kindly just swish over, show some interest, and show people your shirt.
I have a sliver.
Show me your shirt. It says, battle for the soul of the nation, of course. And then at the bottom, Biden. Riding with Biden. So that's right. We're like literally a little less than 20 days out. 23 days. Look at that. He knows exactly. See, this is why I always engage him in this kind of talk to the election. And I hope that people are taking advantage of the fact that you can submit for your ballot to vote by mail. But that window's closing. So if you haven't done that and don't plan to do so, you will have to have a plan, a course of action to make it into the polls and do your duty and not duty, but duty and save this nation because it's...
I did my duty yesterday.
Christopher, is there something interesting on your finger right now?
He has a splinter.
Oh.
All right. Anyway, so shall we?
Yes. So anyway.
Ow.
Can we work on that after the show? Do you think that's possible? Thank you.
All right, everybody. All right. So, Mama Kim.
Timer.
She brought it this week. All right, so everybody, here is Mama Kim's Minute. Number one, a federal court grants citizenship to a couple's twin children in ruling against Trump's administration. Number two, Pete Buttigieg ripped Donald Trump to shreds for being too afraid to debate Joe Biden. Number three, the debates aren't discussing LGBTQ plus issues. Here's the danger. Number four, contractor busted on hidden camera slurring a gay couple that he was working on the house for. Number five, Chris K. Fawcett is the queer, honest voice music needs right now.
Chris K. Fawcett.
I think it's Fawcett, yeah.
Oh, well.
That's Mama Kim's Minute, everybody. All right, moving on. So this week, Gay Talk Term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
Is Roman Candle.
I'm going to do it. Nah, you do it.
All right. So Roman Candle, which means penis of an Italian-American or just plain out Italian, you've got what it takes to make a Roman candle spark.
So you have a Roman candle.
It's overrated.
I mean, I've been with a Roman candle. I'm definitely 50-50. Gross. I'm not going to lie. But
so she's basically got a cherry.
But have you guys ever been like dickmatized?
Christopher, have you ever been dickmatized?
Perhaps.
Like 100% where you're like, I'm in love with a penis? Because that has 100% happened to me and it was with an Italian.
Well, we all know clearly you've talked about this before. I mean, like you were seriously like in it.
Oh, to
Italians
win it.
Aren't real though. So like.
How so? Why not?
Why? I'm sitting right here.
She's not real.
All right.
Okay. So I don't think I've actually, I can say I have been digmatized before.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been several times in my life and where I've seen a penis and I'm like, my God, that
but
is
when
gorgeous.
You have it?
When you taste it or have it and all of those good things. Yeah, it's just absolutely
like, I would have married that man for the penis.
So, all right, so why don't we just keep it moving? Right. Roman candle was the gay talk term on this day in gay history. So shall I do it?
I mean, yeah, sure, I guess, right. Since Chris walked away.
So on this day in gay history, of course
brought to you by GayRealEstate.com,
where in Colorado, who, unfortunately, we lost Matthew Shepard. It occurred on October 12th in 1998. Matthew Shepard was a University of Wyoming student who was kidnapped, beaten, tied to a fence post, and left out near freezing temperatures for over 18 hours on October 7th, 1998. He died at Padre Valley Hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado, 5 days later at 12:53 a.m. from severe head injuries. He was 21 years old. Shepard's death brought renewed attention to violent homophobia and renewed campaigns for state and federal hate crime legislation, eventually leading to the passage of the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crime Prevention Act of 2009.
And we talk about this every year, but we all know how close this is to my heart. So
right. And so right now he rests. He's currently resting in peace finally after 20 years of trying to find a place for him to rest at the Washington National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. And may he rest in peace. So that being said, if you love the show, ladies and gents, make sure you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your web browser as soon as our episodes are published. And you can also support us on Patreon, which allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation, which can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. We collect those donations monthly, and we certainly appreciate your help. So, Next week,
Nick has been lacking on booking people. We have a slew of people I need to reach out to. Sorry in advance if you're listening. I will reach out to you. We'll probably have a guest next week, if not the rest of the month. And thank you to our guest, Jared, for sharing his amazing and touching story with us tonight.
Right.
We can't wait to talk to you again and continue to have you as a part of the Gay Talk family. And then don't forget... Get your discount for the future method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum, and now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or one subscription per person. Tom.
Shall we put a rubber on it?
Yes.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com. Under show and episodes, it is also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio. You can also,
Nick announces, hello. You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
All right. If you need to reach out to us, make sure you just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of the web browser. There you can leave comments, suggest topics, or suggest a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us. Our phone number is 334-429-8255 or 334-GAY-TALK. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye! Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.